The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good morning. Welcome to the Navigating Your Life show, featuring host Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams. In the next hour, the goal of the show is to help you with the challenges facing you and potentially change your life forever. Now here's Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams.
Good morning, and I hope that you are coming back from a weekend that was full of all the things that you wanted it to be. Today we're going to spend some time talking about autism. And we have a special guest with us today. We have Dr. Robert Melillo, who is joining us today to talk about his book that he published in January of this year, titled Disconnected Kids, The Groundbreaking Brain Balance Program for Children with Autism, ADHD, Dyslexia, and Other Neurological Disorders. And this was published by Peregrine Publishing. Let me just give you a little bit more background about the doctor. He has a personal mission to find a cure for these disorders, which started about 15 years ago. He wants to help children achieve some balance in their life by making some modifications that would make a difference. He's devoted himself to the study and treatment of learning disabilities and behavioral disorders in children. So good morning, doctor. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me.
Good. And I believe very much in talking good things into the future. And just to give you a little bit of academic background for the doctor, he has a master's degree in neuroscience as well as a master's degree in neuropsychology. And he's about a year and a half away from completing his doctorate, but we're going to talk positive things into the future and refer to him as a doctor because I'm sure he will complete all the things he needs to do to make that actually happen. So
I also have a doctor of chiropractic neurology.
Oh, wonderful. So you're doctored a couple times over.
Yes.
Well, very good. Doc, let's first start out with you explaining to our listeners what this study was all about, but however you can phrase for our listeners what your work is about. And before you do that, I just want to start with something that really struck me as I was reading your book in anticipation of our conversation today, and it's a short couple of sentences, and then you can share with us what was the genesis for your work here. But you, at the end of your introduction, section of your book, you say that there is no more important social issue today. There is no greater problem that threatens the future of our country and our world than what is happening with our children. I have seen this problem coming, and I have created a program that will stop it. I believe that raising awareness through disconnected kids and giving parents real tools to take immediate action is the quickest way to make an impact now before it's too late. So, doctor, please share some of your thoughts regarding why you have put this all together.
Yeah, well, you know, I when you read that, it just reminds me of you know, what I was thinking about when I wrote that. But the fact is, I completely agree with it, and I think that it's even more true now than it was when I wrote that, that it is the most important social issue of our time. We're facing an epidemic in neurobehavioral disorders in children. And many people are referring to this now as the largest childhood epidemic in history that we know of. Give you an idea of statistics. Autism, for instance, roughly 10 years ago was approximately 1 in 10,000 children born. The most recent statistics that we know just were released about 3 weeks ago now show that it's 1 in 91 in the United States. If you look at 6 to 11-year-old children, it's actually 1 in 68. And if you look at boys alone, it's 1 in 38. So you're talking about a 7,000% increase in the diagnosis of autism from the 80s till now. And you look at all the other disorders like ADHD. ADHD is actually even more prevalent than autism. So you look at these numbers as they're increasing, affecting our children, and it tells us, what's happening to our world, but also, really gives us a wake-up call that we really need to look into this and recognize this problem.
Okay, but Doctor, just to help our listeners understand this a little further, and thank you so much for sharing those statistics, because I think they're very powerful. But what has happened in 20, 30 years that would explain this dramatic increase in the numbers that you're seeing in the disorders such as autism and ADHD and others? What's happening that would account for this?
That's a very good question, and the answer is, at this point, we don't know. One of the things we do know is that it is real. So, right away, obviously, the first thing we see is when we see these numbers, most people think, well, it's just because we're better at recognizing it, we're labeling kids earlier, we're just, substituting diagnosis. Recently, at the University of Cal Berkeley, the MIND Institute looked into that, because in California, there's been approximately a 600 or 700% increase in autism between 1990 and 2006. So they wanted to look and say, well, is it that we're just more familiar with it, recognizing it earlier? Or are people moving into this state more because we have better services? And what they found, and they published this in the Journal of Epidemiology a couple of months ago, was that only 120% of the 700% increase could be attributed to early recognition, diagnostic substitution, or migration. The rest of it represented new kids that had never existed before. So
Doc,
it is actually a real problem.
Right. But, Doc, just in your own trying to make sense of this, do you have any ideas of where this, you have an explanation of the 120% of the 700%, but where do you think the other, 520% increase is coming from?
Sure. Well, once we realize that it is a real increase and, these are real numbers, then the only explanation is that it has to be environmentally driven. It can't be genetically driven, because there's no such thing as a genetic epidemic. You just don't see that. And the fact is, most autistic individuals don't actually have children. So if it truly was genetic, it should be declining, not increasing. So we have to look and say, what's happened over the past two decades? And one of the main things is that we see a tremendous change in lifestyle and early movement development in children, where children are not moving at earlier and earlier ages as much as they should, as much as they need to. And the way the brain initially develops has
Doc,
a lot
you,
to do with
sorry,
the
movement. Doc, are you talking about inside the mother's womb or outside? Yeah, when you say moving at an early...
Well, you make a good point. One is outside the womb especially.
Okay.
When children are first born, we know that, they're not crawling as much as they used to, and children just in general through normal childhood development are not moving earlier. We also know that adults are not moving as much, and we know that that has a lot to do with raising stress hormones and creating inflammation, and we see that that may be also another major target of research, is that increasing stress hormones and inflammatory chemicals in mothers may be one of the major factors here.
Wow. And, Doc, this is just such an interesting topic to me on a multitude of levels. For the last 20-something years, I've worked with individuals with cognitive disabilities and autism for quite a while. But then about 3 years ago, my wife and I had twins, and about a year ago found out that the boy has autism. So when I got your press information as well as your book, I really gravitated to it, because I think it just had so much information in there. When we get to the dietary part in one of our other segments, I'll have to confess some of the sins that we have committed in that area. But
mm-hmm.
having read your book will make some changes.
Right.
So when you... one of the things that strikes me is that I think it's important for us to figure out why this is happening, and I think some of the ideas theories in which you shared are extremely powerful. But I think the other challenge that we have is, you know, we need to spend some time trying to figure out how we can prevent it. But also, I think your book talks about how we can manage this circumstance, and gives a lot of information about how to do that. And we're about 3 minutes till break, so we'll start this conversation and then have to take a break to continue it. But what are some of the overarching things that you believe that needs to be done on the other side, understanding that we have this challenge? What do we think we should be doing to try to mitigate the challenge that is presented by autism and some of these other diagnoses?
Well, the bottom line comes down to, what are these problems?
Okay.
What actually is happening in the brain? And that's the one thing that very few books or programs or anything really address. But that really needs to be the starting point, right? Meaning, how do you even attempt to fix a problem when you don't really know what it is? So that's really where a lot of my research over the past 15 years is. And it's very consistent with what other researchers are finding now, is that these problems are related to what we call a functional disconnection. The good news is that there's no damage, there's no lesion, there's no degeneration that we can find in the brain of these children. What we find is a developmental imbalance that forms between large networks in the brain, especially between the two halves of the brain, so that the child can't engage their whole brain at the same time when they're trying to learn or interact or remember something. So as the child's developing, certain areas of their brain function and mature maybe even at faster than normal rates, and actually have what we call enhanced coherence, meaning that the brain processes information faster than normal, while other areas of the brain are remaining immature. They're lagging behind, they're not developing, and they actually have reduced coherence. And this imbalance is the problem. So what we need to do is that all children, their makeup of that may be different. They have different centers in that particular hemisphere. Some may be really immature and some may not be as immature. And so what we need to do is look at their specific pattern of strengths and weaknesses. We need to address the weaknesses, and we need to do it with whatever that area does. So if it's visual processing, auditory processing, sound, if it's movement, if it's cognitive skills, if it's academics, we need to be able to address those very specifically to what that hemisphere does.
Sure. And, Doc, as we get ready to go for a break, one of the things that you point out is the importance of seeing the similarities. We may have all these different diagnoses, but I think you've been able to distill a similarity between them and a management of how to deal with those issues that runs across them. So we'll talk more about that when we come back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Hyperbike Performance Centers, the extreme motorcycle tuning facility for performance-minded riders. For the most advanced tuning possible, bring your bike in for a diagnostic in their climate-controlled dyno room. Take advantage of their suspension services designed to tweak your bike's suspension till it fits your personal riding needs. All of their performance products are tested in their facility first. Brakes, wheels, alarms, GPS, and more. Hyperbike Performance Centers on Route 40 West, Frederick, or visit hyperbikeperformancecenters.com.
Wielding power, shaping environments and outcomes, and making things happen are all essential characteristics of great leaders. Yet these qualities alone are not enough to ensure your success. In a complex world, how do you decide what's most important to you? In your career, your relationships, your finances, your family, in the world around you, in the whole of your life at large? Dr. Joseph Riggio, the host of Leadership Intuition, says that personal leadership, the desire to take charge of your life, is the key to creating futures that work and building a life worth living. Join Joseph as he reveals the power of uncovering and living your own personal mythology, the key to personal transformation, exquisite performance, and social influence. Learn to look inside and discover your personal mythology and unique leadership style. Go beyond conventional advice and discover your unique success blueprint on Leadership Intuitions with Dr. Joseph Riggio each Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on the Voice America channel. Leadership Intuitions, power, achievement, relationships.
Here, let me try. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Tuned in to the Navigating Your Life Show with Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams. To participate in our discussion, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to host@navigatingyourlifeshow.net. Now, back to the program.
Well, welcome back, and we're with Dr. Melillo. I'm sorry, and he is talking with us about his book titled Disconnected Kids, the Groundbreaking Brain Balance Program for Children with Autism, ADHD, Dyslexia, and Other Neurological Disorders. Doc, you use the acronym of ADHD. What does that stand for?
Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder.
Okay, and you do a very good job on, you know, page 12 of your book of really going through and trying to put in layman's terms what all these things are about. And so when you have a chance, I would encourage our listeners to, be mindful of all these different terms, but on the website, which we'll talk about a little bit later, and also in the book, he does break them down so you're able to understand. An example is the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is really about the inability to pay attention to the point that it disrupts family and friendships and the classroom. I think we covered this already, Doc, but I want to just make sure we have it. Your inspiration to do this research in this area, of all the different things that you can pay attention to as a doctor and a researcher, why this?
Well, you know, I really started my career out in neurology and rehab. Combining those two together was really my main interest from the very beginning. And I spent most of the first half of my career, I've been a clinician for 25 years, I spent the first half of my career really focusing on adults and academically doing research and teaching. And we were working with a lot of brain-injured people or people with strokes, as well as, you know, obviously chronic pain syndromes, things like that. But then as I became a parent, and around 15 years ago, I had some friends who had children with ADHD, and they approached me and started asking me more about it. They asked me if I would research it because there wasn't a lot of information available at the time, and my background in neurology gave me the area to look at that. And I started looking at it, and I became fascinated as a parent. And then I did notice that my older son was showing some signs of it. And it became something personal to me, and also I just related to the parents and saw the pain. And once I started realizing that we could do something that could help them, it just became really literally like an obsession for the past 15 years.
Wow. And we thank you for all you have done, but more importantly, thank you for all you will do in the work that you're doing. And one of the things that you talk about in the book is about when all these issues that you mention and all these diagnoses that come through, that I think there's a natural inclination to start medicating them and to trying to manage them, and in some cases make them go away, because as you mentioned with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, it starts disrupting your family and your friends and the classroom, and so you may have others who are telling you that something needs to be done about your child, and so medication has become somewhat of a solution to some of these diagnoses. What are your
right.
thoughts about that? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, you know, I don't think I know anybody, for the most part, that thinks that using medication is a good thing on children. The fact that we have it available as a tool is a good thing. I'm not, you know, against the use of medication per se. I think that it is a helpful tool for families and can help manage the symptoms. But what I have a problem with is that most of the people that are prescribing the medications don't understand that there are ways to actually try to reduce or eliminate the problem completely so that the medication eventually can be dropped or, you know, completely eliminated.
Sure.
So I think that it's the type of thing that it can be used as a tool to manage symptoms, but you should be doing something to fix the problem at the same time.
Sure. And I think that's such an important piece of information, is that so often with medications, and sometimes I think we have medical people who tell you that. I take a medication for high cholesterol, and the doctor says, well, take this and continue your sins, and you'll be okay. And I think that's a problem, is really, you know, take this and try to bring your numbers down, but at the same time, if you can change your diet and do some other things, that would go a long way. So I think the mindset is, you know, do what you may need to get you by this period of time, but every medication that I've ever seen, a possible side effect of any medication is death, and I think it's very important that, especially as we correlate that side effect to children, that we really only give them something that is truly something we could not do without. Would you agree or disagree with that, Doc?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, there's recent studies that came out just a couple of months ago showing that children with stimulant medication had a 500% increase of cardiac death. So, absolutely. I mean, there is risk, and you're exactly right. These are, in my mind, mostly lifestyle-driven disorders. They're environmentally lifestyle-driven, primarily. And so, therefore, they're potentially correctable.
Right.
And so, by changing lifestyle and by actually addressing the primary problem, you know, medication is not something that's necessarily going to be necessary or needed
forever. And I think you bring up a very good point. I remember maybe about 6 months ago, my family, we all went out for dinner, and my son Taj started to make some noises, and the manager for the restaurant came over and said, is he okay, and is there anything we can do? Basically saying, could you quiet him down? And started eating and was able to be, you know, interested in that, and the noises stopped. But that was the first time, you know, that I really felt what parents have told me about for a long period of time about having a child with special needs, is that the public interactions are sometimes not the most pleasant. And I could see a parent rushing back to the doctor to say, is there something we could do to help him to be a little quieter when he is out in public? And again, I think that begins, and one of the challenges that he has is also sleeping, and I could also see, you know, someone saying that when we're out and going on vacation, is there something we can do to try to help him to sleep better, or even when we're at home, if that's a challenge. So I think that your point about the lifestyle, and that sometimes the way in which we're interacting with the world may make medications necessitous in our own mind, is something to really look at. But I think your point of using that as a bridge, and I think that is a term that I thought I saw in your book, but maybe not. But using it as a bridge to get to the other side, I think, is extremely important. So let's just talk, Doc, for a minute about, let's say you have a youngster with some of these challenges, and they're at school. What should be done when, you know, the teacher has 30 students that they're trying to educate, or 20 students, and so how do you try to still keep them in the mainstream, but at the same time address these issues that are going on?
Well, the idea is that it's very hard to just purely behaviorally manage these things because they're being driven by neurology. When, you know, you have this imbalance in the nervous system that's really causing these issues, they're not being caused because the child is deciding to behave that way or that they have any control over it. And it's very hard to forcibly try to control it behaviorally and dealing with, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy because the child doesn't really have a cognitive brain yet. You know, they don't have really a frontal lobe that can understand. You know, they don't have a reasoning part of their brain. That's why, you know, the best way to deal with it is really to try to address the primary problem as quickly and as effectively as possible. And to do things in the interim, whether it's through medication or through diet and nutrition and supplements, that may also help manage the symptoms better. But the fact is, until you really change the brain, a lot of what we're trying to do and change behavior just isn't going to really work very well.
You mentioned one point about diet and nutrition and other things. We have about 3 minutes until we take a break, but could you just give us an idea of what are some of the dietary and nutritional kinds of things or other things that you feel a person would want to consider in making modifications and what's happening in a youngster's life?
I think one of the things important to understand is that most of the diet and nutrition issues are coming secondary to what's happening in the brain.
Sure.
The brain controls the immune system. The right side and the left side of the brain control the immune system differently. One side, the left side, activates the immune system. The right side suppresses it. And so if there's an imbalance in the immune system combined with a problem with the brain regulating the digestive system, those two things come together to cause a lot of food sensitivities or immune reactions to foods or other chemicals. So identifying that and trying to eliminate those temporarily can be really helpful for managing symptoms and for also helping to reduce inflammation in the child. So there's two ways. One way is you can do it through lab testing. You do what we call IgG testing is the most effective. But then I go through in the book how the parent can do an elimination and food challenge where they can literally identify the child's food sensitivities themselves.
But with that lab test, what would that lab test tell you?
The lab test looks at antibodies, IgG antibodies. What parents get confused on is, you know, the immune system, we have antibodies that are basically our alarm system that go off when we're exposed to an antigen. Most people think that their children will have food allergies and it will present with allergic-like symptoms. But most of the children, 85%, that have these imbalances in their brain, they don't have a true allergic response. They have an inflammatory response. That the allergic response is mediated by something called an IgE antibody. But this blood test looks at IgG antibodies, and this is important because these can be delayed hypersensitivities that don't release histamine. They don't produce outward symptoms. They just cause inward inflammation and cause behavior and learning disabilities.
So, Doc, just before we get ready to go to another break, if you wanted to do the switching out of foods to try to see what difference it would make, that's one way. But would this test reveal the same kind of information as the replacement of or changing of some of the diet?
The blood test?
Yes.
Yeah, the blood test in my mind is more accurate. You can do both of them are accurate, but the blood test is a good way of really looking at and really, assessing what particular foods. There's different ones. The one we most typically use look at 90 different foods. There's ones that look at 45 or look at 120.
Wow.
But that's very accurate.
Well, we're going to get ready to go to a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the solutions that Dr. Melillo has put together for children with autism and other disorders. So we'll talk about that when we get back.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's scary, Ryan, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Hyperbike Performance Centers, the extreme motorcycle tuning facility for performance-minded riders. For the most advanced tuning possible, bring your bike in for a diagnostic in their climate-controlled dyno room. Take advantage of their suspension services designed to tweak your bike's suspension till it fits your personal riding needs. All of their performance products are tested in their facility first. Brakes, wheels, alarms, GPS, and more. Hyperbike Performance Centers on Route 40 West, Frederick, or visit hyperbikeperformancecenters.com.
Is there truly a lesson in every situation? Can you learn from another person's experiences, or are lessons learned when they only happen to you? Dave Pelzer, number one national and number one international best-selling author, challenges listeners to stand tall, to be accountable no matter what the setbacks, and to recommit to enhancing their lives as well as assisting others around them. Listen to The Dave Pelzer Show every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Radio Network.
Hello?
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving, and I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Tuned in to the Navigating Your Life Show with Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams. To participate in our discussion, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to host@navigatingyourlifeshow.net. Now, back to the program.
Well, we're back. We are talking with Dr. Meluo, who has written a book titled Disconnected Kids, the Groundbreaking Brain Balance Program for Children with Autism, ADHD, Dyslexia, and Other Neurological Disorders. So, Doc, why don't you share with us the study that you completed recently that talks about autistic spectrum disorders as a functional disconnection syndrome. What were some of the key findings in your study that was just released?
Well, I have two papers that we just came out with. One I just presented at the Society for Pediatric Research in Germany. And essentially, the first paper is really where we, you know, reviewed all of the literature related to this, or a large part of it, over the past few years, and really looked at the concept of functional disconnection as something that could explain all of the symptoms. When children with autism or ADHD or dyslexia, they never have just one problem. It's not just an attentional problem or a social problem or a communication problem or a learning disability. They have other issues going on. They have issues like motor problems or sensory processing. They have also, as we were talking about, immune problems, dietary issues, food sensitivities, digestive problems. And the idea was, in the past, all of these things were looked at as purely coincidental. But many researchers, including like Martha Herbert from Harvard, have said that we realize that these problems are really systemic. They really involve the whole body. But how does that work? Where does it come from? What's the primary problem? Are they all related to one underlying problem? And that's what we were able to show. Using the functional disconnection model, you could explain all of the symptoms, the food sensitivities, the fact that these children are very picky eaters, that they don't have a good sense of smell, that they have specific social issues, attentional problems, obsession, compulsions, specific academic and cognitive skill deficits, motor and sensory processing issues that are very specific. So we were able to basically say, with looking at this one theory, we could explain all of the symptoms and all of these different problems, which is really, you know, pretty groundbreaking, because it really gives us a primary focus for research now.
That's wonderful. Wow. And this program that you have developed called the Brain Balance Program, could you tell us a bit more about the program?
Yes. Like I said earlier, well, the key really is to understand what's happening with the brain, understand this concept of functional disconnection or functional imbalances. But as we also said earlier, each child is made up a little differently. You know, we have hundreds of different centers on both sides of our brain that run all different types of things. And the balance of those can be very specific. So what I've been working with over the years is, how do I identify which specific centers, what combination of centers are strong and weak on this child, focusing on the weakness, and then put together a series of exercises or activities geared towards all of those different centers that are basically designed to get the brain back into rhythm so that the whole brain works together instead of the child only being able to use parts of their brain. So what we do in the Brain Balance Program is really identify through very standard objective measurements in all different areas. So we look at over 1,100 different functions in children when they come into our program. Now, in the book, I give a version of it. We don't look at all of those, but we look at, and I teach parents, and I give them checklists in the book that they can use, as well as teach them ways in the book that they can look at their own child and look for these imbalances and look for these weaknesses, and then there are specific exercises that they will do, and they will do them in combination, because one of the things we realize is that these are multimodal problems. They involve many areas of the brain and the body, and they require a multimodal solution. You can't just address one problem and think you're going to solve the whole thing.
So, Doc, just as an example, you recognize that there are some dietary considerations that a parent needs to be aware of. But that's not one-stop shopping. There are several things, if I'm hearing you correctly, that you'd want to make modifications in. Just changing the way in which the child eats is not going to most likely do it all by itself.
Absolutely. You know, that's why there's no one-size-fits-all diet. I mean, parents are of autistic children are often familiar with what they hear as casein and gluten diets.
Right.
You know, eliminating dairy and wheat-type products. But not all children with autism or ADHD have problems with those products.
And so, and that goes back to your point in the last segment about that blood test would give you some idea whether or not that's something that would really have a good a positive impact on with your child. Am I correct in that?
Absolutely. And that's why, you know, what we're really strong about and what I really emphasize is that you need to measure function. You can't just look at symptoms and behaviors and assume you know what's going on with this child. You need to be able to look at function, measure the functions, and each child is different. I mean, we said that we test for 90 foods. You know, we get children that have, I don't know if I've ever had a child that has had the exact same combination of all different food sensitivities. So, you know, the diet has to be individualized. The vitamins have to be individualized. You know, whatever you do has to be individualized and custom to that child.
Wow. And one of the things that which you normally hear from professionals is that we're going to change this one medication and see if it makes a difference. If I heard you correctly, you may be changing and dealing with the you know, as you said, the multimodal, you may be making a lot of modifications. How do you know what worked then if you're making several different changes at one time?
You mean to the medications? Or?
No, not to the medications, but just to, like, you may be changing their diet, you may be changing
right.
something else. So how do you know what actually was the thing that made the difference when you're making so, and you're looking at so many different functions and trying to modify how they're
yeah,
doing?
That's a very good question, and it's really taken me, you know, this 15 years, because I didn't do everything in the beginning. You know, we would start off with certain types of activities, and then
sure.
we'd get a certain population of children to improve, but then there were other children that didn't improve. So then looking at the, you know, why, then we would incorporate other things. But what we do is very systematic, so that we do specific sensory motor testing and academic testing. We start with that. Then we will add specific nutrition and dietary changes. But as you say, you know, we get very, very positive changes. So if we eliminate a food for 4 weeks, we look at it and say, well, if the child's improved in that time, we can't say that it's just because we eliminated these foods. And how do we know which particular food? You know, is it all the foods or is it one particular food? So then what we do is systematically reintroduce one food back at a time.
Mm-hmm.
While, you know, what we're not changing anything else that we've been doing. And then as we add a food, let's say, that the child may still be sensitive to, they will regress. They'll lose certain gains that we've gotten for a little while. And then we know, okay, that food they're still sensitive to.
So it's important to eventually find out exactly what was working or not working. But reality is you don't want to just do one thing. You want to be working on several different areas. And then once you see, if I've gotten you correctly, Doc, once you see improvement, then you want to back up and start saying, hey, where did that improvement actually come from? Am I getting that correct?
Absolutely, because, you know, if you, and this is where I have a problem with certain people that approach diets where they'll, you know, eliminate 20 different foods, and if the child improves, they just keep them on that diet forever. That's a problem, and they don't address the neurology at all, and that's a problem for a couple of things. One is there may only be one or two foods there that are actually getting you the results. So the other foods, the child needs to have a good, varied diet. Plus, it's very stressful on the family to maintain that diet. Also, if you don't address the primary problem, that the brain imbalance is what's making the child sensitive to these foods, then even if you eliminate the foods that they're sensitive to now, they may just develop new sensitivities down the road, and you can end up eliminating everything, which can be very problematic.
There are also brain balance centers. We only have a minute before going into our break, but are these centers throughout throughout the country?
Yes, we have 20 centers right now that are either up and running or will be up and running very shortly. We have 3 in New York, we have 3 in the Atlanta area, 1 in LA, 1 in Louisiana, Michigan, Chicago, South Carolina,
and so you could bring,
Philadelphia.
So you could bring your loved one in and have this kind of assessment done on them.
Right. The book is designed for parents that can't get to a center or that may not need that level of intervention, but for other parents who feel like they really need more help, they can bring the child in. We do the assessment, and then they bring the child in if they're accepted into the program 3 times a week for 12 weeks, and then we reevaluate them completely.
Wow. We're going to get ready to take a break, and we'll finish our conversation on the other side of this commercial.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
And we're back. Bob from Scranton, you're on the air.
Hi, Ted. Love the show. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, Bob. Is there a special someone out there you'd like to talk about?
There is, Ted. I recently lost a very big part of my life.
You'd been together a long time?
Since college. This is for my belly, my paunch, my spare tire. I know we had some good times. God knows I'll never forget that night in Albuquerque with the burritos.
It's never easy to lose something that's been such a huge part of you, Bob. Where'd the magic go?
Well, I'd recently begun taking the stairs more and more instead of the elevator, and then we started seeing less and less of each other. One day, it was just gone.
Small step number 67. Take the stairs instead of the elevator or escalator. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hyperbike Performance Centers, the extreme motorcycle tuning facility for performance-minded riders. For the most advanced tuning possible, bring your bike in for a diagnostic in their climate-controlled dyno room. Take advantage of their suspension services designed to tweak your bike's suspension till it fits your personal riding needs. All of their performance products are tested in their facility first. Brakes, wheels, alarms, GPS, and more. Hyperbike Performance Centers on Route 40 West, Frederick, or visit hyperbikeperformancecenters.com.
Are you living with passion, purpose, and play? Are you ready to overcome your fears, claim your power and purpose to make your mark on the world, but
don't know where to start?
Tuck Self, the Rebel Bell, will inspire and empower you to squeeze as much juice and joy out of life as possible. You'll find your passion, live on purpose, and do it all with a boatload of play. Join this amazing voice for Tuck Talk every Monday at 6 p.m. in the East and 3 p.m. in the West on the Voice America Variety Channel. Live rebelliciously and on your terms.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are tuned in to the Navigating Your Life Show with Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams. To participate in our discussion, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to host@navigatingyourlifeshow.net. Now, back to the program.
Well, we are back again, and we're finishing up our conversation today with Dr. Robert Melillo, who is a author of a outstanding book titled The Disconnected Kids, The Groundbreaking Brain Balance Program for Children with Autism, ADHD, Dyslexia, and Other Neurological Disorders. So, Doc, we were talking before the break about the program. You mentioned that it's three times a week for 12 weeks to help to do an assessment and look at the functioning of a particular child. What have you found, and how long has this these centers been in operation, and what have been some of the stories that have come from the work that you've done?
Well, we've been doing this for approximately 15 years, but we've really started to expand it out really only over the past 4 or 5 years or so, because I really spent the first 10 years really researching it and really making sure that we were getting the results that we believe we were before we started going out and telling parents and doing this on a widespread basis. We really wanted to make sure the foundation was there. But the stories that we're getting now in the centers and what we hear every day are just unbelievable. I mean, really, really heartwarming. We have a number of letters and things that are mentioned on our website. But, you know, we're getting dramatic changes. I can give you one quick story that is kind of sad but really dramatic and shows what parents are willing to do. This was a parent of an autistic child. Child at 3.5 was completely nonverbal. And this was in one of our Atlanta centers. And the parents got my book, found out the center, brought their son down. And the mother had devoted her life to really helping the child. And by 7 years old, he was pretty functioning. He was in school. He was with a full-time aide in a self-contained class, but he was somewhat verbal and doing okay, but she really knew that there was more, and it was hard work. She started in our program. He was getting phenomenal results, really progressing greatly. The mother was a model mother as far as following directions. Unfortunately, 2 months into the program, the mom passed away.
Oh,
suddenly.
Wow.
And so the father, who had just been working all the time, had never been involved with the program, called the center, and on the day she died, driving there, said, listen, I'll be there in 5 minutes. I need to talk to the staff. So they just assumed he was going to withdraw his son from the program. So he walks in, and he has all of the things that we give him for home use, things like certain tools and vitamins and minerals and books. And he comes home, he comes in, he puts it on the table and says, I have to continue doing this program. This was the most important thing to my wife. She was so happy at the results we were getting, and this was her whole mission, that the only way I can honor her is to continue doing this. Will you please teach me what to do? So all the girls there, of course, are crying. Other mothers jump in and say, we'll help you. We'll do things. We'll shop. We'll bring your... And even on the day they buried her, the father made sure that the son came into the program that day.
Wow.
You know, stories like that just are what, you know, keep me going.
Wow.
With this.
Wow, wow, wow. That's really very, very powerful, and as you say, a real testament to what you're doing and how important it is to keep it going. But what are some of the other things that you give as advice to parents who have a child with autism or ADHD or dyslexia or obsessive compulsive disorder, but any diagnosis, Asperger's syndrome? What are some of the things that you suggest to them as some first steps to begin this long journey? And I think your story about the mother, about the intensity that it takes to stay on top of this, to really try to intervene early in a child's life so that they have the best platform as they get older to launch from. But what are some of those pieces of advice that you'd like to share to parents who are facing this this challenge?
Well, you know, there's a couple of things. One is that, like I said, I think that no matter what the problem, whether it's the cause or just contributes to it, we have to make sure that we have our children moving properly, that they get the right amount of exercise. Too much time in front of a computer or TV, too much downtime. You know, the old model of a child comes home from school, they do their homework, and they go outside, it's dark. We need to reinstitute that. We need to get children to move. The instinct now with both parents working and the TV becomes the babysitter, you know, we're afraid to let our children out. So we don't let them outside, so we keep them inside. But children need to move. That's how they build their brain. Wow. The other thing is we really have to be careful what we feed them. 20-30% of people in the United States admit that they go to fast food restaurants 2 to 3 nights a week for dinner. You know, that's not acceptable. We need to be able to feed children properly as well. They need stimulation. They need exercise. They need to eat properly. They need vitamins. They need things like that. The other thing is, you know, resist. You need to work on the child's weaknesses. So, you know, with a child, let's say with Asperger's or something like ADHD, they love technology. They're very bright in many areas. So they love to use computers. And so parents think naturally, okay, well, I can teach my child through the computer and I'll teach them social skills on a social network. It doesn't work that way. You have to get them away from the computer.
Doc, let me just interrupt you. I want to just get one caller in before we have to wrap up.
Sure.
We have Jennifer, you're on the line, so please pose your question.
Yes, it was really more of a comment. I just wanted to thank you for, especially for the comments about all the different options and possibly being an alternative to medication or at least a reduction in medication. It's just
right.
Something that we're not really told.
Right.
And I can't thank you enough for that information. I just wanted to call in and do that.
Thanks,
well, that's
Jennifer.
Great, because that really is important to me. Again, I'm not, I don't want to go out and really, you know, put medication down per se or anything,
sure.
But I do think it is so important that people know that there are other options available that might eventually lead to not needing medication anymore. But that is something that no one is ever told. So I'm very glad that you found that helpful.
Good.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jennifer.
You're welcome.
Doc, please share your website and a way for people to contact you.
Sure. It's brainbalancecenters.com. That's with an S. And that has all of our sites. And people could email me either through that site or through rmelillo@brainbalancecenters.com. All of this information is also in the book, Disconnected Kids.
Can you get that book online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble?
Yeah, Amazon, as well as, you know, Barnes & Noble, Borders, all of those online services, you can get it that way. And also, if they go to the website, a number of my scientific papers are there. They can just download them for free, so they can see all the research behind this, so that this is you know, very well researched.
Good. And Doc, I want to really thank you sincerely for all that you have done, and as I said earlier, want to also thank you for all the stuff I know you will continue to do, because you definitely make it clear that this is something that's near and dear to you. It's how you make a living, but it's far deeper than that as well. And I want to share with our listeners that we will keep this conversation going, and we'll have the doctor back in the future for us to update him, update us on what he has found and stuff that's going on in research. Hopefully we've made a friend and the doc, and he'll keep us informed going forth. So
I want to thank you for what you're doing, bringing this information out to people. It's very important, and I would love to come back at any time in the future.
Good. So we are wrapping up our show and wishing you the very best for the week, and look forward to having you back with us next week. Thank you.
Thank you again for listening to the Navigating Your Life show. Please join Dr. Nathaniel J. Williams again next Monday at 7 a.m. Pacific Time, 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Have a great week, and here's hoping your life will change for the better forever.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.